Okay, so Parshas Vayera is quite the Parsha, and this is part of the value that we have for being able to focus on one Aliyah at a time, because sometimes it's an Aliyah which you just wouldn't really pay attention to because there's other Aliyahs that draw more attention. That's certainly true this week, but it's especially powerful because no question, this is an Aliyah with a ton of action. This is an Aliyah which, on its own, really would attract a lot of attention. But there's so much going on in the rest of the Parsha, including the Akedah and other events of tremendous significance, that it's hard to pay attention to everything in the Parsha. And I'll mention that I have a sefer called The Home called Minchas HaChaim, which you haven't heard me quote from yet. And I probably won't quote from in the future weeks either, because the whole Sefer is only on Vayera. And it's about 650 pages long. And it's got about 100 pages on this Aliyah. And you can imagine there's just a lot to talk about in Parshas Vayera. So to be able to spend a few minutes focused on this Aliyah is a privilege of this plan that we have. And before getting into the psukim itself, I'd like to just comment on a general issue which connects to the parsha and connects to this aliyah in a way that may not be so obvious. It has to do with a contemporary concern. There is something going on nowadays which has been called cancel culture. And what it involves is that somebody does something or says something more often, write something that attracts negative attention, and as a consequence, there is a movement to completely kishmo kainu, to cancel the person, to delete him from all kinds of relevance or involvement in anything to do with society. And it's a tremendously dangerous trend, and there's a lot that is very harmful about it, more than we can really discuss in this context. But it provokes a question a little bit because, you know, we could say that, well, we believe in cancel culture also, that there certainly are people within Jewish history and Jewish life that have done things that have led to them being canceled, so to speak. And in this week's parasha, we find entire cities being literally canceled, being literally destroyed and wiped out. So what's the difference? So it's quite a difference, but first, I would start off by saying that it's not necessarily about the question of the canceling, it's about the culture. That nowadays there is this whole movement to try to root out anything that anyone has ever done that is regrettable or unfortunate, and to, with great zeal, have that person completely destroyed and have that person completely removed from any aspect of polite society. And it's that more than the canceling, which is the root of the issue. And a part of what you see in Parshas Vayera, that yes, you do see an entire culture that is canceled, and that's itself part of it, that the culture of stone is what led to them being canceled. And the culture is very much the issue. And a part of what we'll see in this Aliyah, the very beginning of the Aliyah, just as we start off right now, the parsha is telling us, "Velot Yoshev Bashar Stom," that Lot is sitting there at the entrance of Stom, and Rashi tells us that he was appointed as the judge. And there's a whole discussion behind that. What was the purpose of that? What does that represent? But it highlights the fact that Stom, with all of its evil and with all of its necessary consequences, so it's not that Stom didn't have a justice system, but it's about how the justice system was carried out that was so indicative of its evil. And this is a major statement, that it's not enough that you have a system of justice, that you try people, that you evaluate people, and that you punish people, but the way that you do so says a lot about society, says a lot about the culture. And what we're seeing nowadays in cancel culture is that it is something that purports to be justice, but it carries itself out in profoundly unjust ways. just to note some of its most prominent elements. First of all, it's arbitrary. It's certainly not applied consistently in a way that represents any genuine fairness, and that itself is a terrible distortion of what a system of justice should be like. It's wildly disproportionate. It imposes penalties on people that don't correlate at all to whatever it is that they are accused of doing. Sometimes it's not even any kind of a clear offense. Sometimes it's a perceived offense. Sometimes it's a simple inconsistency with whatever is contemporarily the popular way of thinking. And certainly that does not accord with any standard of justice. It's completely unforgiving and therefore cruel. And that's what the Mishnah says in Maseches Bava Kamma, that if somebody seeks forgiveness and that forgiveness is earned but not granted, so then that's called achzarius, it's called cruelty. So to have a system that is cruel is, again, a terrible distortion of what justice is supposed to be. And it's not effective either, especially because so often what earns someone's cancellation is a lack of sensitivity or a perceived lack of sensitivity. So that's not something that you can correct by destroying the person. That's something which needs to be addressed through education, needs to be addressed through a more deliberate process. So to take an approach that's both punitive and unforgiving is completely counterproductive to any kind of goal. So it's all purports to be a system of justice, and it's very much the opposite. It's very much anything other than justice. And part of what we see in this parsha is that to employ something in the guise of justice and to be at odds with all the core principles of justice is far, far worse than nothing. It is a terrible, terrible crime against society. And Sdom itself is guilty of that. They're guilty of having Shofet, having the appearance of some kind of justice, but clearly it is cruel. It is without any vestige of compassion. And it's more for appearance's sake, as some of the commentaries suggest. Okay, look at this great show they'll be able to put on, getting the nephew of Avram to be their judge. Imagine how that's going to look. So it's more for appearance's sake. All of this is tremendously harmful to any claim to justice, and itself is a culture which needs to be canceled. It's a culture which doesn't allow for any kind of fairness or any kind of fairness or any kind of righteousness to exist. And it's perhaps specifically contrasted with Avram. So Avram, in the beginning of the parsha, so we find that he is informed of Sdom's impending destruction, and he davens on their behalf. And he says, "Ha'shofet kol aretz lo yaseh mishpat." How could it be that God, who is the judge of the whole world, how could he act with anything other than fairness? And we have to very carefully evaluate, is this really just? Is this really something that needs to happen? And the Nitziv, in his often quoted introduction to Sefer Bereishis, so he invokes this as part of the reasoning why Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer Hayasha. Different candidates, what's called Sefer Hayasha. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah quotes a pasuk referencing Sefer Hayasha and has a few possible options of what it is that Sefer Hayasha is, and one of them is Bereishis, because it's the story of the Avos who are called Yesharim. And he goes through there about the various qualities of Avram and how he davens on people on behalf of the people of Sdom. So why is that Yashrus? It's not the Rahmanas. It's not just about Rahmanas. It's about having to see that there is actual justice and that there's a system that is fair and there's a system that is proportionate and a system that is calibrated. And Sdom is the opposite of that. And Sdom ends up being a culture that needs to be canceled because it is canceling people unjustly, and that's something that you have to be very sensitive to. And I'll also just mention before, again, jumping into the psukim specifically, but it goes actually right to the very, very beginning of the Aliyah, where we're told this about Lot being placed there as the judge. But the Aliyah begins of Avosh Nehamalachim Sidoma Ba'erev, Velot Yoshev Vishar Stom. So here the Malachim come now at night, and why did it take so long? It's an interesting discussion. Marit Stashinsky suggests that they gave Lot a little bit of a chance to do something in his role, to have some kind of an impact. But there's also a fascinating medrash, very difficult to understand. There's a medrash that says that we have clearly going to be a parallel between this interaction and the beginning of the parsha. The beginning of the parsha, so Avram is approached by Malachim and he brings them in. And there's going to be a lot to compare about the two. And the Medrash has a statement, very hard to understand, says that Avram, Shekocho Yafa, he had strong spiritual abilities. So his guests, Nidmalo Ke Anashim, his guests were actually angels. They appeared to him like people. While Lot, who didn't have the same spiritual resources, so they appeared to him like Malachim. So that seems to be the opposite of what you would imagine. He's saying that Lot was more in tune with what was actually happening. They actually were Malachim. So because he was less spiritually capable than Avram, that's why it appeared to him this way. So there's a comment by the Litzke Rav, a very popular sefer on Chumash, the Znayim LaTorah, Rav Zalman Sirotskin. He has a comment there, but you can find a much, much greater length. He also has a sefer of essays, a few sefer of essays. But one sefer he has of essays, it's called Hadeya V'Hadibur. And he has a very, very long essay about Hachnasas Orchim, where he goes into much greater length about this idea. So the same comment that he has, much more of a kitzer, his commentary to Chumash, is a tremendous amount to say about this in this essay. He quotes one interpretation from his brother-in-law, so it was interesting, but he ultimately doesn't accept it, that one of the differences between Lot and Avram is you have somebody who has a basic faith in humanity and recognizes that people can be good, so when they meet somebody who's refined, okay, so they say he's a good man, they understand you could have people who are on a high level of character, but somebody doesn't have a great faith in humanity and doesn't think people are ever really noble, when they meet somebody who's actually refined, they think, oh, he's a malach, he's an angel. How could it be that somebody actually is like this, must not be human? So Avram, who had greater faith in humanity, he saw his guests as humans, even though they actually weren't. While Lot, who couldn't believe that people could be refined, and looking at people around him, didn't seem like that was possible. So he saw them as angels, as a malach. He says, it's a nice word, but it's probably not really shot here for various reasons. But he focuses on the fact that why is it that for the sake of Lot, it was presented much more clearly that these were not regular people, that these were of an elevated status and were in fact angels. And he discusses there how really this was an opportunity for tshuva, this was an opportunity for things to be saved at the last moment, that this whole culture of Sdom, which was so separated from any kind of kindness and didn't believe in chesed at all and wouldn't allow any kind of graciousness or hospitality be shown to anyone. And again, for our synergy purposes, Bez Hashem soon will be at that sugi of Kofan al Midas Dom, and we'll explore the ramifications that has for practical halacha, the understanding that this was the culture of stone we mentioned last week, the Mishnah in Perkei Avos, which says that the mentality of Sdom is Shali Shali V'Shalcha Shalcha, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, and there's no room for any kind of chesed, for any kind of your benefiting from my resources, even if it wouldn't cost me anything. So the culture, which was so separated from any kind of kindness, so here was an opportunity to see, could they have any possibility for redemption? That maybe it could be that there's some possibility that there's some guests that they will treat with kindness. So maybe every time somebody passed through Sdom, anytime there was a traveler, anytime there was somebody in need, so they could find some kind of excuse, you know, that who knows, he's a drifter, who knows if it's safe to bring him into my house. He could say this, he could say that, he's not worthy of being treated with respect and attention. So maybe each time they found a reason why they didn't have to do it. But here we'll give them one last chance. And we will bring a opportunity to their doorstep where you have angelic visitors, people who look very distinguished and who look like it would be a great honor to have them. And see, this will be the last chance. At least these people, or supposed people, will be worthy of getting some kind of good treatment from Stone. So it was this last effort to try to give them an opportunity to show that if the circumstances were perfect, if there was nothing that they could point to as a reason not to do it, that they would maybe find it in their hearts to have some kind of kindness. And this also, I think, goes to the cancel culture point, that first of all, when you're looking to treat somebody fairly and when you're looking to decide how to treat them and how to judge them, so you're not looking specifically for the worst moment and looking for when there was maybe some kind of a slip of the tongue or some kind of a careless thought, but you're trying to look at the person at the best moment and trying to look in the totality of their character and see what there really is and what there isn't. And that's absolutely crucial for judging someone, again, so completely absent in the cancel culture of today. And here we're seeing the complete opposite. But also, again, that the Stone themselves were engaged in cancel culture, deciding that this person is not worthy of being supported, this person is not worthy of receiving any kind of sustenance, and I can disqualify this one, I can disqualify that one. So that was already part of the mentality. And again, trying to see, is there, okay, one kind of guest that maybe you won't want to cancel, and that maybe you won't show yourselves worthy of being canceled, because that will be the opportunity to show somewhere in there there is some positivity. That's also a crucial part of the whole process of justice. Okay, so that's all important to keep in mind. And as we see more in the Aliyah, more in the Parsha, some of these themes also continue to present themselves. But look further into the Psukim. So what's happening? They're approaching and he's sitting there. So Lot saw them and he got up to greet them. And he bows down. So here, this idea that he greets his guests, so we see that he still has some aspect of Avram's influence. And Rashi quotes here, "Mi beis Avram lamad lechazer al ha'orchem," that he learned from Avram's household to look for the guests, to be aware of them, and to bring them in. And Siv has a comment about this here. Rashi already alludes to it. And that's it for Menchas Hachayim. So he notes the language. He didn't just learn it from Avram. He learned it Mibes Avram. So the idea that he learned it from Avram's house, does that mean anything specific? So he suggests two interpretations which highlight different aspects. Now, one is that we know that Avram's house was built in such a way so as to seek out guests. It had those openings on every side. So it was structured in such a way so that it should be a place of Hachnasas Archim. So it wasn't just Avram who was an influence. It was even his actual physical household. But also in the house, the idea that Avram's chesed wasn't just a flashy kind of chesed where he looks to try to help people who are far away, but is not so concerned with the people inside the household. And that's a comment that's relevant to next week's parsha. Next week's parsha, we'll see that Avram will bury his wife, which is a chesed, technically, but it's also the most basic kind of thing any husband would do. You can't expect any less. And yet, there's a medrash that states that when Avram did this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu declares, oh, now he gets it. Tafasta sumenos. And now I see that he really understands the concept of chesed. So it's a surprising comment, because you can see everything about him was chesed. Certainly was not the first chesed that we read about for Avram Avinu, and nor would it seem to be the most impressive, the same kind of thing that everyone does. So Alter Slobodka and others comment that sometimes a person is involved in chesed and in acts of altruism and kindness when it's very flashy and it's some kind of extreme situation far away from home, so a person is eager to help. But within his own household, he's not really involved in any kind of acts of kindness. And the truth is, charity begins at home. It's not just a saying, it's a halacha, that the concept of chesed is a system of priorities that we're supposed to start with the people closest to us, including in our own household, and radiate in a circle expanding from there. So we don't perceive the way we treat our household members as chesed. We think, yeah, that's just normal, that's just basic. But that is chesed too, that's your first priority of chesed. You're supposed to be such a person of chesed that your kindness overflows beyond your household as well, and as far as it can go. But it's got to start from that core and extend. So Lot saw that it's not just that Avram was engaged in public acts of kindness, but mibeso shel Avram, in his household, he expressed this kind of kindness. It was able to be perceived on the inside. So this was all impressive to him, and he was imitating that. But the imitation is really somewhat incomplete, and that's a point that we see from the continuation. It's the next pasuk that goes, V'yomer hinei na Adonai, Surana el beis avdechem v'linu v'rachat suragleichem v'hishkamtem v'halachtem l'darkechem v'yomru lo kivarachov nelin. So he tells them, please come in. He uses all this language, which, as Rav Soloveitchik noted, you know, a few years ago they published a number of volumes after Rav Soloveitchik passed away, a number of volumes that were yet to be published, full volumes. So there's a volume, I may have referenced it last week, I remember, called Abraham's Journey, which has a lot to say about these parshios. So there, he discusses that you see that the language is evocative of Avram's language from the beginning of the parsha. You see again how much he retains this influence. But that being said, it's somewhat external, and there are differences. Rav Simcha Zussel Broyd, the Rashi of Hebron, and his Sefer Som Derech, so he notes a number of differences. He counts it as five differences, but some of them kind of overlap. But he notes a number of differences between what Avram did to his towards his guests and how Lot treated his guests. That it's not that Lot was sitting there specifically for the purpose of looking for the guests. He was sitting there because that was his position. And he also had an eye out for guests. He didn't run over to welcome them in. He didn't speak to each one individually the way Avram did. There are significant differences, or first small differences, which eventually manifest themselves as bigger differences. For example, the fact that he's ultimately willing, as we see, to send his daughters out to be abused in order to protect the guests. So that is a direct contradiction to any value of Hachnasas Orchim, and especially what we just said a minute ago about Beso, about having a concern for your own household. So clearly he missed the point, he missed the message as far as that's concerned. So there was this external kind of imitation of Avram's chesed, but it didn't actually get absorbed in his soul, in his personality. He wasn't actually a character of chesed the way Avram was, and it plays out. You see that it manifests itself very differently because it wasn't coming from that same genuine place. And that also continues into the next pasuk, which Shom Shnafal Hirsch notes, that if you keep reading how the next pasuk goes, so he's taking care of them, but it's also different. Vayutzar b'ma'od, v'yasurila, v'yavo v'beso, v'yaslah ha'mishta, v'matzo safa v'yochelu. So he makes food for them. He says, come on, please come in. And he makes the meal for them, and he makes the matzos. So it's nice that he does all that. But if you remember from the beginning of the parsha, so when Avram hosts his guests, there's a lot more detail for sure, but also there is the involvement of his whole family. And it's much more of a group operation because he has created a household of chesed. So here in Lot's situation, it's very much more limited. It's only him doing it himself. You can imagine it sounds like, it's almost literally is this, and it sounds like somebody who grew up in a religious household and then intermarries, and the rest of his family is not Jewish, and he's trying to maintain some kind of Jewish practice. So he's doing it by himself. He's doing it without the involvement of the rest of the household. So that's essentially the picture that's painted here, that there is this influence of Avram. But it is very, very limited, and he's not impacting the rest of his household, and it's not even getting into his neshama in the same way, and these differences begin to become very blatant. So just to read through the next few psukim, so Terei Mishkavu,
Vanshair, Anshay Stone, Nasabu, Labayas, Minar, Vyadzokin, Kolom, Mikotze, so all the Mav gathers. Vayikru, Alot, Vayomru, Layayan, Ashim, Asher, Boelach, Halayla, Hutsiem, Elenu, Venedo, some. How could you be involved in this kind of hospitality? You should send them out here to be abused. Vayetse, Aleihem, Lot, HaPescha, Vahadela, Sagar, Acharav, Vayomru, Alna, Achai, Tareyu, don't do this. So also, just to say one more thing about the cancel culture imagery, you know, a lot of it has to do with tremendous mob pressure, that there is tremendous pressure that is exerted on people to be very harsh in their treatment and to not tolerate any kind of deviation. So here the mob pressure is evocative of that as well. So here Lot says this very shocking thing of Hine Nali Shtevanos Asher Loyaduish Otsiana Sen Alechan Vyasulahan Ketov Benechem Rakla Noshim Hoel Altasudavar Kialkain Bo Basil Karasi. So again, here's this contradiction that we spoke about a few minutes ago, that he's hospitable and at the same time he's ready to subject his children, his daughters, to this kind of treatment. You see the phenomenal inconsistency and internal contradiction that he embodies. There is another story in Tanakh which evokes the story to some degree. It's a really horrific story. The story in the end of Sefer Shoftim of Pilegish Begiva, which the Ramban discusses here at length without going into all the very gory and disturbing details of Pilegish Begiva. But it also involves a mob coming to the house of somebody who is hosting somebody and demanding that the guests be brought out. And in that case, this man sends out his Pilegesh, and the people have their way with her, and she ends up dying, and terrible things happen, and there's a terrible war afterwards, without going into all the details. But they're very hard to rehash, a very disturbing story. But Ramban talks about in his commentary here, he has a long discussion about to where that story, as bad as it is, as horrible as it is, but it's also still worse, the people of stone, because there, it says in Pilegish Begiva, the mob was just interested in pursuing their own typhus, as terrible as that is, and that's what happened. Here, it was specifically to punish the chesed. Here, they wouldn't be satisfied with any other alternative, because it's a way of trying to say that we don't want you to be able to have any guests, and we're going to have to make the point, make the lesson, that this is what happens to people who try to violate our policy. So for that reason, it's a terrible disgrace for Stone even more than the story of Pilegish Begiva, and those all kinds of other details. But also, as he emphasizes there, was a group of hooligans, it was a group of terrible people who were involved in that. But here, it's the whole city, it's the whole culture, it's the whole personality that of the town that is coming to say, this is the way that we act, and this is what we believe in. And they continue to say to him in the next pasuk, Vayomru Geshala, Vayomru Hechad Balagor, Vayishpot Shafot, Ata Neralacha Mehem, Vayifsru Vayishbalot Ma'or, Vayishlus Borhadalas. So this whole idea that they are now angry at him for violating their culture, for trying to tell them what to do, when this is against their whole standard, their whole practice. So it highlights the fact that a part of the evil of stone, again, is the culture, and it's what is codified. It is what is a part of their rules. It's not just that there are some bad people there, but they have formalized evil. And it's also evocative of Nuremberg. And I tell my ethics class that the word Nuremberg evokes in two different ways how there can be a very significant and blatant clash between morality and law at times. And that it evokes this in two ways, because the Nuremberg laws that anticipated the Holocaust, where the discrimination against the Jewish people was not just practiced by hooligans, but was formalized into the legal system in Germany, and was made into the expression of the population in its legal code. And then, ultimately, after the war was over, the Nuremberg also was the place of the trials. And the trials were, at the time, very, very controversial. It was when the Allied forces, United States and Russia and England, put the Nazis on trial, put some of them on trial, and ultimately, I think looking back, it's considered to be a tremendous triumph of justice, of how there was an effort to adjudicate these people in as fair and as consistent a way as possible. But at the time, it was very, very controversial because the laws were not the issue here. They were not, normally when you have a trial, so somebody violated codified laws, and the trial is about assessing how they violated the laws and what the punishment should be. But here, the Nazis were the ones who made the laws. They were following the laws. They were carrying out what was legal in their culture. And to figure out how to address that in the context of a trial, how to address this moral and ethical travesty that was still legal, was a part of the challenge and a source of great controversy at the time. There's a lot to say about that, but it just highlights how there, at times, can be a earth-shattering disconnect between law and morality, and that's when a society is really rotten to the core. And so here, the fact that they have not only bad behavior, but they have laws that represent such evil is a big part of why they needed to be destroyed. Okay, so in any event, so then this clash here continues. V'yishlachu anashim es yodam v'yaviu es lot aleihem habaisa v'yasadela sagaru. So they pulled Lot back into the house and they closed the door. V'yas hanashim asher pesach habayis hiku b'sanverim yikaton v'yar gadol v'yulim soha pesach. Yulim soha pesach. So they knocked these people out. They made them blind somehow. They made them unable to see. And they weren't able to find the door. And Lutzkarav, in his essay, so he comes back to this a few times, he considers this language to be metaphorical also, that literally they couldn't find the door, but also the Pesach, it was the Pesach Teshuva, that the point of the angels coming there, as he had said before, was to create an opening for some kind of a return, that there should be a reversal, and they missed the point, that wasn't going to happen. They weren't even able to, under these circumstances, have any kind of a redemption, so they were too knocked out to find the door, to find the Pesach. It doesn't just mean the physical door, it means the door to tshuva. So, v'yomru hanashim alot, od, milach hapo, who else do you have here? Chasun, v'nacha, v'nasecha, v'chol asher l'cha b'yir, hotzim min hamakom. So, who else is here? You should take them out. Ki mashchisim anachnu es hamakom hazeh, ki gadla tzakasim es p'nei Hashem, v'shalcheinu Hashem l'shalchasa. So we're destroying, we're taking this whole place down. So whoever you have in here, you should take out. Now, this is also interesting because you see that whatever schus Lot had to be saved, theoretically he could have saved everybody in the household if he was able to have more of an impact on the people within his family. So he would have been able to save them too. But as we'll see, they're going to be resisting and it's going to end up not saving them. But that's itself something about him. It's interesting. It's evocative. We go back to Parshas Noach. So Noach, we know the poor guy, he's portrayed as a tzaddik in the Torah. But in the Torah Shebaal Peh, they keep finding things to criticize about him. And one of the things that is brought up as a negative about Noach is that he was worthy of being saved, but he couldn't save anybody else outside of his whole family. The whole rest of the world ends up getting drowned. So that is somehow an indictment of Noah. And the question is, what exactly was wrong about him? The fact that other people didn't change. So is it that he didn't care enough? Is it that he didn't work on trying to change them? Or is it that he just didn't have the influence? And maybe that itself is something which deserves criticism, that he hadn't built up enough trust, enough history with them, that he could have made a difference. So here we've already seen that Lot and his family were at somewhat of a disconnect, that it was not the household of Avram. He was not living that kind of a life and not having that kind of an impact on his household. So theoretically, he could have even saved him even then, But that doesn't happen. So we see that the Pesukim can go on to tell us, Vayetze Lot Vayedabra El Chasanav Lochev Nosav. I think the first comments here also, that now saying Lochev Nosav is a way of kind of reducing the impact of saying Chasanav, that we talk about son-in-law as somebody who's a part of the family. When somebody is a son-in-law of a distinguished person, it's considered to be an honor because the assumption is that he is incorporated into the whole family value system. But here the emphasis is, by adding the word lochev and osav, it's as if to say these are just the people who married his daughters. These are not people who took on the value system of the family of Avram, and they don't have any connection to what's trying to be transmitted here. And the Yomer Kumu Tzum and Hamakom Hazeh, so he tells them they should leave. Kimashkes Hashem Esayir. How do they react? He commits a chayk. They figure he's joking. They have no appreciation for what's happening. Chmo Hashachar Allah veitzu Amalachim belot leimor kum kaches ishtucha v'yeshnei v'nosecha hanimsos penti sofa ba'ovon ha'ir. So you have to, the Malachim say, okay, so it's not happening with them, but now that's already lost. But you're going to have to get out of here and take your daughters, take the single daughters. So that's itself interesting. And this is something that Rav Soloveitchik addresses at great length in that volume, Abraham's Journey, where he notes that there is a disconnect here also, that in terms of who was saved and who wasn't. So we know that the daughters of Lot, and what's going to happen after this, so they are going to become, at least one of them will become the ancestor, will become the ancestors of Mashiach. That Mashiach is going to come from Moab, and Moab is going to come from what happens next. So Soloveitchik goes through there, there's a Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, which draws a connection, a linguistic connection between David HaMelech and this pasuk about Nimsos, and in order to highlight that it all goes back to there, David makes a comment. The Gemara says that he realizes his history starts here, and Rav emphasized that what the Gemara is telling us is that there are certain midos that need to be transmitted down the messianic line, need to be transmitted down to the Mashiach. And here, what the daughters are going to do, that they're going to have this relationship with their father, so obviously that is tremendously inappropriate, to say the least, but they thought they were doing the right thing. They thought that they were saving the world. And the Gemara uses this actually as an example. Gemara elsewhere uses this as an example. We call Avera Lishma, of something that is a transgression, but is done for noble reasons, and whether or not that justifies it, it's a whole different discussion. But the Lishma part is something that is worth noting, that they felt that they were making an important contribution to the saving of the world. And of course, that's what the Mashiach's role is as well. So to hold on to that Midah and to make sure that that's a part of the Messianic line, that's why history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, had dictated that these daughters are going to be saved despite these very unusual circumstances and this very unusual plan. So Vayismama Vyachaziku Hanoshim Biyodo Vyarishto Vyashtev Rosav Vachemlas Hashemalov Vyotsiyuhu Vinichum Vichutzlair. So he delayed, but God has Rachmanis on them, and so on him and his, these family members, so they pull him out. So the fact that he's delaying after just trying to convince his sons-in-law to come is itself quite surprising. Rav Nevinsal has a drasha about this in his Sichos, where he talks about the idea Chazal have that Rishoyim Gemurim Afilo Al Pischo Shel Gehenna Meinem Chozrim. The Gemara says that when you have people who are really bad, so even when everything's collapsing around them, even when they're at the entrance to Gehenna, they still don't do tshuva. So it's one thing, okay, they're not going to do tshuva when things are good, but even when things are clearly not working out anymore and things are clearly looking bad for them, so they're still not ready to do tshuva. So here he delays. So what's pshat on the delay? So he discusses there this idea that some people won't do tshuva even when everything is collapsing. So clearly there are some who do and some who don't. So you have to figure out what it is that makes one more repentant or less repentant under these circumstances. And he says presumably it has to do with the midos, that if there's a midah
that is taking you down a bad path, so then it's something which is kind of on autopilot, then even when all rationality is telling you that this is not good for you, the same way that you always knew that it wasn't good for you, it wasn't making a difference, so too, even when the message becomes more blatant and seemingly unmissable, it still doesn't necessarily have an impact, and there's still this possibility of resisting. So vayhi kotziyamo sama chutza vayomer himalei dal nafshacha al tabita acharecha v'al tamod b'chol akikar ha'hara himalei pentisofes. They say, so you should save yourself, and you have to go, and don't look back. So first of all, this idea of himalei dal nafshacha. So the Yerushalmi in Maseches Sanhedrin says that it means you're lucky that you are escaping with your life. And the Torah Tamima comments here that it means to emphasize that it's kind of midah keneged midah in a sense, or at least it has a clear message to it, that here Lot chose this whole setting because he thought it was luxurious and that it was materially beneficial to him. So now he's just leaving with himself. He's leaving without any possessions in order to emphasize how bad of a calculation that was. It's evocative of the idea that Vilna Gaon has of a comment of a concept of din v'cheshbon, that we get judged and we have to give an accounting. So what is the concept of cheshbon? So Vilna Gaon has one interpretation of what the difference between din v'cheshbon, and the others say that the notion of cheshbon is you have to pay for your averus, but you also have to correct the calculation that you made that made you think that the Avera was a good idea, and you have to see how even that is something that was mistaken. So here he chose this whole place to live because it was luxurious, and now he's leaving without anything. You see, it's not just correcting the Avera, but the Cheshbon was wrong. There's Nayim Matorah comments here also that he lost everything because he separated from Avram. Avram was a source of bracha, and removing himself from that context, as we discussed last week, now sometimes it's also an interesting parallelism when we focus on one aliyah a week. You note sometimes how the aliyah connects from one parsha to the next. The relationship between Shlishi of last week and Shlishi of this week is also interesting. So because he separated from Avram, as we discussed last week, so therefore he removed himself from all bracha. So he's told not to look back. So why shouldn't he look back? So Rashi quotes the idea that you should understand sometimes there's some kind of a satisfaction in seeing the downfall of Rishayim, but you haven't earned that because you're not being saved on your own schus, you're being saved on the schus of others. So it's enough that you're saving your own life. You don't also get to look back and see what's going on. The Ramban has a long comment here where he quotes that, but he also notes that it's not just that, but also there's a spiritual impact to seeing such things, to seeing such destruction is bad for a person, and therefore it's not a good idea to look. You shouldn't be watching. So here, towards the end of the Aliyah, so the Psukim continue, and Lot is resistant to making the long trip away. So Yomer Lot Aleihem, Alna Adonai, Hinei Na Matza Abdu Chachem Be'enecha, V'tagdel Chastucha Asher Asisei Modi L'Hachiosis Nafshi, V'Anochi L'Uchal Himalei Tohara, Pen Tidbakani Haroa B'mati. I'm not going to be able to make it to the mountain. I could get swept up in this. Hinei Na Ha'ir Hazos Krovo L'Noshama V'hi Mitzar, Imalto na shama halo mitzar hi v'stichinafshi. So there's this little city here, Tzar, which was also supposed to be destroyed, but save that, and I'll go there, and let that be my Yeshua. So here, it's interesting as well, and Menachem Sechaim has a comment about this, and it's the last time probably we'll quote him this year, so we'll give him the last word of this particular Aliyah. So he notes that what basically is happening here is Lot is trying to make the case that he's being told he should really go back to Avram, but he doesn't feel like he's capable, he doesn't feel like he's on that madrig anymore, that he's fallen so low that he needs to build himself up more slowly. So he's saying he should go to this small place, and that small place is can be very different from what he's used to as far as this luxurious setting, but maybe that'll be a kapara. Maybe that itself will be a atonement for his pursuit of luxury, and he'll be able to build himself up and slowly come back. That was the claim here, which he was given somewhat of an opening to have honored. It's interesting also, the Gemara in Shabbos says that there's an advantage to a younger place, a place that hasn't been in existence so long. It was also a smaller place, which some of the Sfarim point out that alone allowed it to be saved, just because the aggregate of evil is less than a larger place. But also a place that hadn't been established as long, the Gemara says, you're better off in such a place because it doesn't have such a history of guilt. It doesn't have such a buildup of chov. And this is something that Rashi of Karmi Avni used to talk about a lot, that there is an impact of place, that the history and the context and environment that's built up has an effect on those who are there. And that's something that we have to appreciate. He would note that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that the Shlosh Shiyoshu Be'ein B'nehem Divrei Torah, Harezah Moshe Leitzim. So if these people who are learning and there's no different sitting, there's no different Torah between them, so that's called Moshe of Leitzim. And the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Moshe of Leitzim lo Yashav. So what's going on there? So he says that it's not that the fact that they're not learning establishes the place as a Moshe of Leitzim. So as if there, we see that there is no learning going on between the people there, and maybe that shows you that there is a history of cynicism and scoffing and of disrespect that creates an environment that has an impact, that has an effect. And therefore, one has to be cognizant of that and has to be careful to try to seek out a context and an environment that is conducive, to recognize that sometimes there's a very negative impact, and that's really what got loaded into this whole situation, a lack of appreciation, again, this direct flow from what we discussed last week, that he didn't appreciate that entering into this context could bring him so far down. And the ultimate value of finding a context that lifts you up and that is inspiring is so crucial. So that's a part of what we have to appreciate here in this wonderful yeshiva. You know, over the next week or so, there is a big focus on the Chag HaSmicha that's being celebrated. I'm sure you've seen the signs and the posters all over the place, and this Shabbos and next Shabbos there are events that are focused on that. I'm planning and I'm going to be in the Five Towns this Shabbos and Ritz Hashem in order to celebrate that point. And we're very lucky to have an environment and a context that does so much to elevate us spiritually, to take care of us physically, but to create an environment in which we have a whole history and a legacy of positivity and a value and of holiness to build on. It's not a small thing. It's something which has a tremendous impact. It's what Lot did not appreciate, and what that hopefully we do appreciate, and that we're able to build on and to absorb and to use that to continue to go further. So I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. It should be a Shabbos of good health and happiness and inspiration. And we'll daven now, and we'll continue our Chazara, God willing, on Sunday.